This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
The transit landscape is changing rapidly in the Kansas City region. What are the most recent changes to both the bus system and the transportation for seniors and people with disabilities? Find out today on Radioactive Magazine on Transit Talk. I'm Janet Rogers of Transit Action Network. We are a Kansas City regional transit advocacy group fighting for riders, improved and expanded transit, and the cost-effective use of public money for transit. If you want additional information, go to our website at transactionkc.com. I'm speaking with Dick Gerald, KCATA Vice President of Regional Planning and Development, and Jameson Auten, KCATA Vice President of Regional Service Delivery. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
KCATA is moving quickly to consolidate and change transit in the region. Earlier this year, KCATA started managing Johnson County Transit after a 30-year break, and they hired a new president, CEO Joe Reardon. I interviewed Joe on our April show. Changes are continuing. Recently, they started managing the Independence local bus system. Thursday, Johnson County voted to increase property taxes to pay for expansions to the Joe and Special Edition, which provides transportation for people with disabilities and seniors. So there's lots of things to talk about today. Dick, let's start with Independence. They only left KCATA about 3 years ago to run their own local bus service. So what is happening here, and how is this better for riders?
Well, effective July 1, ATA, through agreement with the City of Independence, we assumed management of their transit services. And by management, that does not mean ATA is going to operate all of the services, but we're going to manage their contract for fixed route services and provide them through contracts and paratransit services that James described a little better. One of the things for customers is we really wanted this transition to really be seamless and almost invisible to the customers. We didn't want a disruption in services, so we really wanted it, from a customer standpoint, simply to be business as usual. So they can make their connections, get their ride, no schedule changes, everything worked just as it had the day before. One of the big changes, however, which was a positive for customers, is that the City of Independence and the Indy Bus on the fixed route service side is now part of the regional call center. So today, you can call the regional call center and get information on any of the four fixed route systems in the region. That was not the case prior to July 1. So that's a major improvement in service for the customers.
And Jameson, what is happening with paratransit in Independence?
So Indy Access, which is the paratransit service in Independence, is now being managed by the KCATA, which means that riders of Indy Access can now call in through the paratransit line at the ATA, which is 816-842-9070, and get information on their rides, schedule a trip, and also get information on how to apply for the service. One of the big benefits is that the eligibility process for Indy Access has now been rolled into a regional process for ADA paratransit. So there's one application for each of the ADA services in the region, and that's a benefit to the Indy Access folks not having to apply to several different services to use transportation.
And has the cost of either of these services, the regular transit or the special transportation, changed?
No. The cost to the passenger has not changed at all. Fares have remained the same.
Yes, and I think that's one of the really positive things that we've accomplished lately is we have been able to make the fares for Indy Bus, fixed route service, and the Metro services pretty much the same. You can transfer between the systems very easily. You can buy a $3 day pass, use it on all of the systems, and that has not changed.
Okay, that's really great to hear because we really like ATA managing all these services because it winds up with a better chance of seamless transit for everybody. And so we're really excited about that. Now, Johnson County's made a big change too. TAN is really excited that Thursday morning they voted to increase transit funding. This is huge. It hasn't happened for a very long time and shows how the county is recognizing the demographic changes in the county and also increased need for transit. So, Dick, what changes to the Joe service are planned?
Well, the Joe fixed route services will change in a very positive way. This is a very positive development for the citizens of Johnson County, as well as for those of us in the region that want access in and out of Johnson County as well. So the fixed route services that are being proposed with this change, we will basically close some gaps in service. One of those gaps is between the Mission Transit Center and KU Med Center. Today, you can get there, but you have to go downtown and come back out to get to KU Med Center. We will basically close that gap and provide direct service between the Mission Transit Center, KU Med Center, and downtown KCK. We will also improve those connections within Johnson County. The Medcalf Corridor, the Medcalf Connect service, today operates on a different frequency, different headway than the 75th Street Corridor. This change will allow the 75th Street service to operate on hourly headways, just like the Medcalf service, so people transferring between the two can now have a better connection. And the 75th Street line and the Medcalf line both have connections into Kansas City, Missouri, which is good for people of Johnson County, traveling within the county, traveling to KCMO, and vice versa. We also will be extending the Medcalf Connect service, so it provides service to the new Prairie Fire development in southern Johnson County, as well as a leg of it going to Johnson County Community College, again, for better connections. ATA service on our 175 route with this change will also be beefed up, and that's on 95th Street and Medcalf in Johnson County and makes connections to KCMO. So all in all, some really good improved connections between Johnson County for people who want to travel within Johnson County, for people who want to travel from Johnson County to KCMO and to Wyandotte County for jobs, and people in the other parts of the region that now can travel much more conveniently to Johnson County with these better connections.
When you're talking about 95th Street, that connects to Bannister in Kansas City, Missouri, right? So is that going to all be connected?
Yes. Today, the route, we run a route 175. It actually begins over at the old Bannister Mall site, runs across 75th Street, goes by the Ward Parkway Shopping Center, down to 95th Street, across 95th Street, and then down Medcalf to southern Johnson County. Three trips in the morning today, three in the afternoon today. It does very well, very good ridership, but only 3 a.m. and 3 p.m. trips. This expansion will allow us to double the number of trips on that route, improving connections for people that are in Missouri coming to Johnson County for jobs and vice versa, as well as make good connections with the Medcalf Connects line at 95th and Medcalf.
Is there any talk about going east-west, though, on 95th, say from Bannister all the way over to Oak Park Mall?
So one of the things that we are looking at in that regard is another improvement on a route in Johnson County that would extend some service on 95th Street over to Oak Park Mall and beyond over to some jobs centers in Lenexa. And I think it's the Renner Park area. So we're going to be looking at that as well, to take this funding that's been available and actually take a look at that. We're also looking, as part of a study that the region is doing with Mark and the ATA, looking at access to jobs throughout the metropolitan area. This is a project that's going to take the next 18 months to complete. But the 95th Street corridor, with what's going on the Missouri side, for instance, with the new Cerner development, as well as the jobs that are occurring in Johnson County along that corridor, we think it's a very good corridor to take a look at long-term for improved transit service and improved connections to jobs on both sides of the state line.
Yeah, because I think that's one of our big interests, is how do we get more people connected to jobs in Johnson County? Because they're such a powerhouse of jobs now, and it's very hard even for Johnson County residents to access those jobs, and would really like to see that improved. What about working longer hours? I know Johnson County's transit, the JOE, has always been a commuter service, and it does a real good job getting commuters to downtown Kansas City, but that's mainly for office workers. There's so many workers now who work in retail and service industry jobs that they don't get off work until 10 or 11 o'clock at night. So what about increasing transit for those workers? Those are other commuters too.
You're right, Janet, and that's an issue not just in Johnson County. That's an issue throughout the region. ATA's last buses are really between midnight and 1 a.m. is our last services in even in Kansas City, Missouri. And we know a lot of people, with the way shifts work today, there are jobs all hours of the day. And so when we look at this jobs study and how we improved access to jobs by transit, we do want to look at that. We do want to look at all shifts of work and see where and how we can best provide access to those jobs, be those jobs that are traditional 8-to-5 jobs, or be they jobs that run after midnight into the evening. So we'll be taking a look at that. We'll also be taking a look at the cost of providing that transit service at those hours of the day and night. Have to balance that at all times when we take a look at transit access.
Jameson, this Johnson County vote was also really a big amount of money into special transportation. Their special transportation is called Special Edition. So what are the changes that are going to happen there?
You know, Janet, the vote really was a good positive step to connecting people with opportunities. Folks that use the Special Edition service, one of the changes was a elimination of restrictions on people using Special Edition to come into Kansas City, Missouri. The current program has trip reasons being medical to come into the city. With the elimination of those, people can access work, pleasure, whatever pursuits that they're after, and be able to really connect with everything that is here to be offered. The second change is a participation in a pilot program that uses a taxi voucher system, similar to the one that's in Olathe. And what that would do is allow riders, Special Edition users, to get a voucher to ride a taxi for a certain number of miles in any direction, and also that frees them up to be able to reserve a ride and take a trip whenever the taxi cab company is open, and not just during the hours of scheduling or the hours of Special Edition as it currently stands. So two very good steps. One, removing boundaries, helping to create connections for folks who are also eligible for the Share a Fare program to be able to get around the region. And the second, to be able to have access to a pilot program system that's supported by some grant funds as well, to allow people more freedom and greater mobility.
Well, will the Special Edition bus eventually be open up to riders from outside of Johnson County?
That's a consideration that the county would have to come to a decision on. As we move to build a stronger mobility and transportation network, certainly those types of possibilities do exist. Right now, we happen to use the same scheduling software and the same scheduling rules for paratransit that Johnson County does. So all of the systems are sort of connected that way, or have the possibility of being connected that way through the scheduling process. So we need to take a look at different models to see what that looks like. Again, as Dick said, balance the cost of that and see how effective that would be. But certainly those possibilities do exist.
I imagine that we'd want to see some sharing in cost for some of that. Just like if people from Johnson County use Share Fare, you know, they have to pay for that. So if people from Kansas City were going to use Special Edition, there would have to be some cross-funding on some of those issues.
Absolutely, and we see some of that today. For instance, Share a Fare provides inner-city paratransit trips between Kansas City, Missouri, and Independence, and those trips are spread out so that there's an equal share on the cost of that service. Likewise, with unified government, with inner-city paratransit trips as well. So we see some of that in existence already, but to take a look and see how all of these trips connect in one big hopper could really lead to a more enhanced cost-sharing mechanism and perhaps even lower cost service overall by better grouping of trips.
So Johnson County just passed this tax increase on property tax. So when can we expect to see these changes happen?
So the changes on the Special Edition for the boundaries, I believe, will occur first quarter 2016. The taxi voucher program is still in implementation stage. Those grant funds were just awarded a couple weeks ago. So we have still in process for identifying providers. So that would probably earliest second quarter.
Dick, what about the fixed transit? How soon can we see that implemented?
Fairly quickly. Remembering this is a budget that was passed last week by Johnson County for the year beginning January 1. We think first quarter of next year we will see the first of these improvements implemented and operating. The first of those is likely to be the connection between the Mission Transit Center and KU Med Center in downtown KCK. We'd like to implement that just as soon as possible because it's a gap we want to close. The rest of the fixed route improvements we will operate and implement in a phased approach probably have them all operational by the middle of next year.
There's another gap that TAN would like to see closed, and that's from the Mission Transit Center over to the other big transit center in Wyandotte at 47th.
At 47th and State,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, we'd like to see that connection reestablished as well.
So would we, and I think that's one of the connections we'll be looking at when we look at this regional jobs connection piece. There are lots of jobs also being developed in Western Wyandotte County, and that would be a great place to bring some services to and then have connections there to Western Wyandotte County. So it'll be looked at, but at this point we don't have any specific plans in place to put that connection in place.
You are listening to Transit Talk on Radioactive Magazine on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. I am Janet Rogers with Transit Action Network. You can find us at transactionkc.com, follow us on Twitter, or like us on Facebook. I am speaking with KCATA Dick Gerald and Jameson Otten about the recent changes in transit and special transportation and how these changes affect riders. There are lots of changes to all the special transportation services in the region. Jameson, can you kind of highlight some of those? I know you mentioned a little bit there's a new qualification form, the one call center. So what are those changes and what impact do they have on people?
Sure, lots of changes, some front-facing and some behind the scenes. The biggest change right now has been the development of a regional eligibility program for ADA paratransit. We'll begin to tackle the non-ADA discussion over the next couple months as well to try to simplify that process and make it more clear than mud to the users. The other thing that has changed is we've changed our business model and how we deliver paratransit services. It used to be that the ATA did the reservations and scheduling portion, and we had a service contractor provide the actual service on the street. We've switched to a model that actually mimics what Johnson County does. So we have two providers, one that specializes in creating good schedules and the other provider that delivers the service on the street. That change and the fact that it mirrors what Johnson County does and uses the same software opens up a myriad of possibilities in terms of how we deliver service, how we group trips, service efficiencies. And as we move forward in creating a more thorough mobility network, offers the possibility of having the rider not really care who delivers the service as long as it's done in a safe and meaningful way and have several different providers be able to deliver that service so it's also done in an efficient way. So I think those are the types of changes that the customer has not seen yet. But on the front end, having that eligibility process, having customers be able to get information on Indy Access or Dollar Ride in UG or on Special Edition or on Share a Fare by calling in to one main phone number and then going from there provides a benefit as well. So basically some streamlining and on the back end, some operational pieces that will bear fruit.
Has anything changed on the eligibility in order for all of these systems to work together?
We've gone to one application that takes a look at how an individual's disability impacts their use of using the fixed route network. And I think that's been the most meaningful change in that the determination is a personal one. Folks who have the same disability can often navigate the system that we have in place differently. So it really takes a look at that piece. And we've also combined that with a regional travel training program for folks who use paratransit but do want to use the fixed route but just don't know how. So we have that program which provides a one-on-one hand-holding to the level of the customer to get them trained on fixed route so they can navigate that system as well.
I really think a lot of people would like to move to fixed route if they knew how to use it effectively because it gives them a lot more flexibility and scheduling is so much easier because you just go to the bus stop and they don't have all the other complications.
You know, you're right. The sometimes getting on that bus can be intimidating for the first time, right? So this program is designed to take that away. Our travel trainers will ride with passengers for as long as it takes so that they're comfortable, and then they even shadow them on their first official trip on their own to make sure that they're safe. There's several benefits in that. One is that they don't have to call and book a reservation anymore. They're able to be spontaneous. They're able to decide, I want to go to the plaza today. No, I want to turn around and go to the Northland. No, I want to turn around and go wherever. with paratransit, that's impossible because you have to book your trip a day in advance. The other advantage is the number of headways on each route. You know, if you've missed your bus, depending on the route, there may be another one coming as frequently as 15 minutes. So, you know, that opens up a whole new world for folks who are using paratransit but can use the bus and choose to use the bus. I will point out that going through travel training does not diminish the person's ability to use paratransit. You know, if you go through training, it's not that you can't use paratransit anymore. We don't want people to think that, but we want to add another tool to their commute toolbox.
So it's really a win-win situation. When they feel they need or want paratransit, they can still use it, but when they want flexibility or last-minute decisions, they can hop on a regular bus.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the other positives is we get a lot of feedback from our travel trainers on how our service is being delivered. So the way we deliver service on the street, does someone with a disability, does that help them or does that hinder them? So it gives us an opportunity to take a look at policy. It gives us an opportunity to look at attitudinal changes if they exist. And that feedback's been really, really valuable in communicating with our operator trainers on, you know, better ways to do things.
One more thing on paratransit type services is there's a lot of the region that is not covered by things like Share Fare or Special Edition or any of these other regular ones that the transit agencies provide. So there's another whole set that we would call, I guess, on-demand transit services, and they are handled differently. And who handles that?
So there is a couple really good resources in the area for service where Share a Fare or other public transportation providers don't exist or have really good coverage. One being OATS, which handles a lot of rural. ETOS also provides service as well. However, there's a website, it's relatively new, called linkforcare.org. And what that website does is provide a resource for identifying different services by area and what level of service they provide. Our call center here at ATA has started using that resource when we identify folks that we can't serve because of geographical limitations, and we can refer them to other providers. And it's a very good tool, almost like a Yellow Pages of transportation. The other piece I'd like to mention, too, is we have a full-time mobility manager on staff now who kind of lives in the operations world and the planning world. And that person's job is to make connections with various providers that exist and try to figure out ways where we can bring those providers in and help to, again, create a more seamless network so that people do have the options and know what they are. And Link for Care has been a big component of that, but we do have someone on the street as well making those connections.
Well, that's good to know because we don't want anyone who has disabilities to be left out of a good transportation. Thank you for that. Dick, there's several other things going on, and so let's just hit a few of these before we're done.
Okay.
You're doing a bus stop inventory. What changes will that cause?
Well, the first thing we want to do is understand just what amenities we have at every one of our stops and have a good database of what's out there on the street. One of the things we're also finding is that over time, our bus stops have evolved. And by evolved, I mean we have added bus stops anytime anyone has requested one by their driveway. So there are a lot of places in town where we will have bus stops along a route every 100 or 200 feet. And what that does, it slows the routes, it inconveniences a lot of the passengers to have to wait for a stop every few hundred feet. So what we want to do is take a look at, are there some locations where we can remove some of the stops and then consolidate our resources at the remaining stops to provide the passengers at those stops a better waiting environment and actually a better trip time and a more efficient service.
Okay, and another one is the Main Street Max is 10 years old. So I know you've learned a lot from that. Will there be any changes to Main Street Max, and how will the Max system that you're developing on Prospect be different?
Good question, Janet. Main Street Max has been wildly, wildly successful, and we say happy birthday to Max. One of the things we need to do with Main Street Max is basically upgrade the infrastructure. The LED lights need to be upgraded. the real-time signage, we'd like to bring it up basically the standards you're seeing with the streetcar right now, do some upgrades to our shelters. One of the things you'll see with Main Street Max is also a connection with the streetcar. We're very excited about the opportunity that the streetcar brings to transit and the opportunity we have to market Max with the streetcar. For instance, we could promote visitors using the streetcar to Union Station and then hop on the Max with an across-the-platform connection to Max and go on down to the plaza. So we're excited about Main Street Max and what we can do with it as we continue in the future. Prospect Max, we're also excited about that. Very good project. We're very optimistic about getting some federal funds for that. Some of the things that we will do a little bit differently on Prospect would be the level of passenger amenity. We would like to have better real-time signage with Prospect Max. We'd also like to have better access to the Prospect Max stops. One of the challenges we found with Main Street is that, yes, we can build a very nice Main Street Max stop, but if you can't get there from the side street or from up and down Main Street because the sidewalk is impassable or there aren't any curb ramps, it really defeats some of the benefits of the Max project. So on Prospect, we want that to be a corridor improvement, improving access to transit stops up and down the Prospect corridor with better pedestrian environment as well.
Okay, where are we on the fare study?
Good question, Janet. We know that the way people are asked to pay their fares on the bus can be an impediment to getting new people on the bus. So we are looking at ways to improve that whole experience. We've made a lot of progress. For instance, we now have a regional monthly pass that can be used. The $75.60 Joe Pass is used on all the systems. Earlier this year, we implemented a $3 day pass. So for $3, you can buy a day pass, use it all day on all four transit systems. Earlier this year, we started that. One of the things we're also continuing to work on is how do we get a fare structure regionally that's simplified. It's simplified across jurisdictions, that you don't have to change the fare when you cross a jurisdictional boundary. We're still working on the details of that, but that's the ultimate goal, is to have a fare system that's easy to use, may not require cash every time you use it either. We'd like to try some demos with mobile ticketing on your phone, for instance, as well as a way to buy a fare with a credit card or a debit card out of a ticket vending machine, as opposed to having to have exact change every time you get on the bus. So a lot of things we need to improve with that regard, a lot of things still coming down the pike when it comes to improving the way we collect fares.
I want to thank Jamison Otten and Dick Gerald of KCATA for speaking with us today and sharing this great information about all the transit changes happening in the Kansas City region, especially Johnson County and Independence. I'm Janet Rogers with Transit Action Network, and you can contact me at transactionkc@gmail.com. Our next Transit Talk is September 29th. Thank you.
You have been listening to Radioactive Magazine, a locally produced broadcast spotlighting social and political activists in our community. If you'd like more information or like to comment on this program, call Bill Claus at 816-994-7869.